in honor of Balaram's appearance instead of Bhagavatam verse. I'd like to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a series of verses in the Adi Lila 5 that are describing the glories of Balaram. And then in chapter 5 of Adi Lila, Krishnadas Kaviraj expands profusely on these 5. So I'll start with its Adi Lila, chapter 1, text 7. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance, Sankarshan, Sheshanag, and Vishnus, who lie on the Karna ocean, Garbha ocean, and the ocean of milk, are his plenary portions, and the portions of his plenary portions. Text 8. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, who is known as Sankarshan, in the midst of the Chatur Vyuha, consisting of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, far beyond the material creation. Text 9. I offer my obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation, called Karna Dakshai Vishnu, lying on the Karna ocean, is original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy, and the shelter of all the universes. Text 10. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, a partial part of whom is Garbhadakshay Vishnu. From the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu sprouts the lotus, that is the birthplace of Brahma, the engineer of the universe. The stem of that lotus is the resting place of the multitude of planets. And the fifth one is text 11. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Nityananda Ram, whose secondary part is the Vishnu lying on the ocean of milk. That Shirodakshayi Vishnu is the supersoul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universes. Sheshanaga is his further sub-part. So those are the 5 verses. Nityananda Ram, of course, is this, not, Rama refers to Balarama, at least in this context. So chapter 5 is expanding on those verses, and I'm going to read. We normally just hear past times, we don't hear the philosophy so much, but it's a select group of devotees, so we can hear the philosophy and relish it. There means in the spiritual sky. There's text 41 has one of the longest purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It goes from 404 to 406. It's 14 pages. 13 pages. Where the chapter view of Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha constitute the second quadruple. They are purely transcendental. 13 pages later comes text 42. There, that's in the spiritual sky, Paravyom, the personal feature of Balaram, called Mahasankarshan, is the shelter of the spiritual energy. He is the primary cause the cause of all causes. Maha Sankarshan means the of all the, because there's many, many expansions of the four, the Chatur Vyuha, because there's every, wherever there's a spiritual planet, how many Vaikuntha planets are there without number, unlimited, and so the original Sankarshan from whom all of the Chatur Vyuhas come, that's in Goloka, that's been discussed a little earlier, and that is, that Mahasankarshan is Balaram. There, the personal feature of Balaram called Mahasankarshan is the shelter of the spiritual energy. So there's the internal potency, marginal potency, and external potency. Balaram is the shelter of the internal potency or spiritual potency. He's the shelter of the spiritual potency. He is the primary cause, the cause of all causes. Of course, Balaram is Krishna's direct expansion, so we can also say Krishna is the cause of all causes and the shelter of the spiritual energy, because Balaram is Krishna's direct expansion. One variety of the pastimes of the spiritual energy is described as pure goodness, Shuddha, Vishuddha Sattva. It comprises all the abodes of Vaikuntha. So the Vaikuntha planets are manifestations of the spiritual potency of which Balaram is the shelter. And that's a pastime. It's a spiritual pastime. It's not like once upon a time there was no spiritual planets. Balaram thought, let's have some spiritual planets here, and boop. It's not a chronological event. It's not an event within time. It's an ontological relationship, the source, the rest, and the energy that come from the source or the place of rest, or the support. And that's the whole of the spiritual sky and all the spiritual planets. It's resting on that spiritual energy that Balaram is the shelter of. The six attributes, that's Bhagavan, six features of Bhagavan, are all spiritual. Know for certain that they, that's the six, are all manifestations of the opulence of Sankarshan. They're his opulences. And because he's none different than Krishna, there's Krishna's opulences. There is one marginal potency known as Jiva. Mahan Sankarshan is the shelter of all jivas. Sankarshan is the original shelter of the Purusha. That's the three Vishnu forms. From whom this world is created and in whom it is dissolved. This world means the external energy. So he, Balaram, Mahasankarshan, is the shelter of those Purushas. And from the Purushas, the material energy is manifest and is again withdrawn. So those statements are all true, and this is also true. Balaram is the shelter of Vishnu forms, where the shelter of the material energy manifest and non-manifest. He, Sankarshan, is the shelter of everything. He is wonderful in every respect, and his opulences are infinite, not just six. Even Ananta cannot describe his glory. Who is Ananta? Ananta is a name of Anantashesha, the one of the expansions of, there's five expansions of Balaram that are mentioned. and Ananta is one of them. The further subpart is one of the verses that we read in the beginning. That Sankarshan, who is transcendental pure goodness, Vishuddhasattva, is a partial expansion of Nityananda Balaram. So this Mahasankarshan that we've been hearing about so many verses is an aspect of Balaram, or an expansion of Balaram in the spiritual sky, in the Goloka Vrindavan. Mahasankarshan. A partial expansion of Nityananda Balaram. I briefly explained the eighth verse, that's from these verses in the beginning. Now please listen with attention as I explain the ninth verse. Here's the ninth verse. You read it, but here it is again. I offer my full obeisances unto Sri Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation called Karanadakshayi Vishnu, lying on the causal ocean, Karana ocean, is the original Purusha. Karana Dakshayi Vishnu is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy and the shelter of all the universes. So that's ninth verse he's going to explain. Outside the Vaikuntha planets is the impersonal Brahman effulgence, and beyond that effulgence is the Karana ocean, or causal ocean. So, beyond, sometimes it's said on the other shore of the ocean. So there's the Brahma Jyoti. Or say, go the other way. Here's the material creation. We're in one of the material universes. And the material universes are floating on this causal ocean, or Karana ocean, coming from Karana Dakshay Vishnu. And over on this side is the universe, and then there's on the other shore of the ocean, because oceans have shores. It's just figurative speech, because there's the Brahma Jyoti, and the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of Vaikuntha planets, or Vaikuntha Loka. Surrounding Vaikuntha is a mass of water that is endless, unfathomable, and unlimited. The earth, water, fire, air, and ether of Vaikuntha are all spiritual. Did you know? Now you know. There's spiritual earth, water, fire, air, ether. And this is a reflection of that. Material elements are not found there. The water of the Karana ocean, which is the original cause, is therefore spiritual. The sacred Ganges, which is but a drop of it, purifies the fallen souls. In that ocean lies one plenary portion of Lord Sankarshan. Lying in the causal ocean is Karana Dakshay Vishnu. He is known as the first Purusha, the creator of the total material energy. He, the cause of the universes, the first incarnation, casts his glance over Maya. Maya Shakti resides outside the ocean of Karana. Maya cannot touch its waters. Maya has two varieties of existence. A little technical. One is called Pradhan or Prakriti. It supplies the ingredients of the material world. Because Prakriti is dull and inert, it cannot actually be the cause of the material world. But Lord Krishna shows his mercy by infusing his energy into the dull, inert material nature. Thus, Prakriti by the energy of Lord Krishna becomes the secondary cause, just as iron becomes red hot by the energy of fire. Therefore, Lord Krishna is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. Prakriti is like the nipples on the neck of a goat, for they cannot give any milk. The Maya aspect of material nature is the immediate cause of the cosmic manifestation, but it also cannot be the real cause, for the original cause is Lord Narayan. Just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter, so the creator of the material world is the first Purusha, Karna Vashayi Vishnu. That's how it's spelled here. Lord Krishna is the creator, and Maya only helps him as an instrument, just like the potter's wheel and other instruments, which are the instrumental cause of a pot. So there's the ingredient cause and the instrumental cause. It's technical, but it's how the material energy works. There's an aspect of Maya that supplies the ingredients. There's an aspect of Maya that is like the potter's wheel and whatever it is that helps shape the pot. Some the potters have little instruments to do what they do, besides their hands. So your shape pulls it up or puts it down or whatever. It's soft clay. The wheel itself. Those are instruments for making the pot. And then there's the ingredients for making the pot. And then there's the potter. The first Purusha casts his glance at Maya from a distance, and thus he impregnates her with the seed of life in the form of living entities. The reflected rays of his body mix with Maya, and thus Maya gives birth to myriads of universes. So it goes on. It's describing the process of creation, and of course, Krishna Das Kaviraj, the title Kavi means learned or poet, and Raja means king. He was given that title. His name is Krishna Das, but he was called Kaviraj because so he's all learned. And what he's doing is he's describing the Panchatattva. Next comes Dvaitacharya. Previously was Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda, Dvaitacharya, and Srivas, and Gadadhar and Srivas. He's describing the Panchatattva. And Nityananda Ram is Balaram. So all of this is Balaram. I think we're honoring his appearance today. So what's our relationship with Balaram? It's a mega relationship that we have forgotten. On the altar, Krishna Balaram, there's Balaram holding a plow, and so there's that name of Balaram, the form of the Lord carrying the plow, is Hala Dhar. Hala is a plow. Hala Dhar. Dhar means holding in his hand. And Krishna is holding a flute. So one of the names of Krishna is Vamsi dhari. Haladhar and Vamsidhar. And these are two functions. Krishi Gauraksha are two functions of Vaishyas. Krishi is agriculture, so that he uses the plow for agriculture. And Krishna plays his flute to attract the cows, of course, everyone and everything, but that's the function of his flute. Beautiful description. That at the end of the day, after those, how many of you have been to Vrindavan? Okay. So when you do go to Vrindavan, those of you that haven't been, for sure you're going to want to visit at least three places besides all the temples in downtown. Radharani's place, Krishna's place, and Govardhan Hill. Now, Krishna's place, where Nanda Maharaj lived, is Nandagram, kind of like a mini mountain or a big hill. And the palace of Nanda Maharaj was up on top. Nandagram. And at the end of the day, well, in the morning, Krishna would get ready to go with Balaram to herd the cows. Some days Balaram was not present because Krishna had a pastime that he wanted Balaram to not be present. Like we discussed, for example, the Kaliya serpent. Balaram stayed home. Because the Leela wouldn't have worked properly if he was there. So he wasn't there. And when all the cowherd boys and the cows drank the water, as if they were dead, Krishna came and, astonished by his own yogamaya potency, was bewildered for a moment. And then by his own will, the yogamaya potency went away, and he knew exactly what to do. He glanced upon the cowherd boys and the cows, and they came back to life. And then he tightened his belt and went up the kadamba tree and jumped, making a big splash. So then the Kaliya serpent came to fight with Krishna and the whole pastime. But Balaram wasn't there. So one of the cowherd boys went running back to Nandagram, a big, long distance, Kaliya got in Nandagram. He ran fast. Got Nanda and Yashoda. Balaram was not fazed at all, because he was in the coils of the serpent, but he was just, you know, Krishna's having fun. Relax, everything's going to be nice. Mother Yashoda couldn't be stopped. So they all went quickly. Balaram went also. Mother Yashoda wanted to enter into the Kaliya Lake to save Krishna. Balaram stopped her because she's Bala. Even Mother Yashoda couldn't get past Balaram. So it's just part of Krishna's pastimes. Balaram understood. Krishna's having fun. He's dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent, and he's having a great time. No worries. So he's always there assisting Krishna's pastimes. He's Krishna's expansion. He understands everything that Krishna understands. And that's everything. However, by the influence of the yogamaya potency, sometimes Balaram doesn't understand. To enhance the pastime, like Palambasura. When Palambasura was started to carry off Balaram, Balaram was, hey, going for a ride, having fun, and Krishna called, look out. And then Palamba became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and the yogamaya potency was withdrawn. So Balaram could understand, this isn't just a cowherd boy, this is a demon. Pow! Finished. One stroke, finished. Pastime. Balaram killing Pulambasura. But otherwise, Balaram understands everything Krishna understands. He's there always. The message that we like to hear always about Balaram, he has such a mood of service. Although he's not different than Krishna, there are two differences. He's white like snow or milk. Krishna is black like a monsoon cloud. So the color, their luster, is different. And the mood of Balaram is always serving. Even sometimes he takes a contrary position, it's still in the mood of service. Like his partiality towards Duryodhana. Long story. But Balaram would never transgress whatever Krishna wanted. When Arjuna kidnapped Subhadra, Balaram was, go get him. But he had to go ask Krishna, can we go get him? Krishna said, no. It's a great honor. It's heroism. It's an Kshatriya dynasty. This is very respectful. We shouldn't go with our armies to stop him. We should go with our armies to bring him back and have a grand wedding with Subhadra right here in Dwarka. Huh. But Balaram can't transgress what Krishna wants. So he did what Krishna wants. You know, even brothers don't always function like that. If one brother and another brother. But Balaram always functions like that. And he's the elder brother. He's the elder brother. And in Vedic culture, the younger brother always does what the older brother wants. He just follows like guru. But Balaram, the elder brother, does only what Krishna wants. Even if he's doing something that looks like it's contrary. Because it's for the pleasure of Krishna. Moved by the internal potency. That's Balaram. And he so we're hearing from this early part of chapter 5, Adi Lila. He manifests everything. Say it negatively. Is there anything that Balaram doesn't manifest? There's no such thing. Say it positively. Whatever there is that exists, Balaram manifests. Anything you can think of. The forms of all the living entities in Goloka Vrindavan, their bodies, their paraphernalia, the Chintamani that makes up everything. Anything you can think of, Balaram expands his potencies to manifest those things because he's the source and the place of rest, the shelter. It's an existential statement or an ontological statement to say he's just like in Bhagavad Gita, that we have this similar understanding. Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman. Pratishtha means basis and support or rest or support. He's the shelter. So there's Brahman and Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman. So we can say Balaram is the pratishtha of Brahman. Because he's the basis and support of everything. And because he's Krishna's first expansion. He loves serving. And there isn't any area that he doesn't serve. And all the different rasas and everything in the spiritual world, the section we were hearing is everything of the material world. The whole shebang is resting on Balaram. The Purusha avatars, the expansions of Mahasankarshan, or one of the Sankarshans of the spiritual world, who are all expanded from Mahasankarshan, who is an aspect of Balaram, and then the Vishnu forms manifest the whole cosmic, all the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. And then they withdraw, and the living entities, the marginal potency, rest in this Mahasankarshan, and they're sometimes in a form and sometimes withdrawn in this dormant state. It's like the whole shebang is going on under the potency of Balaram. Different expansions of him doing different things, all for one purpose, pleasing Krishna. He loves serving Krishna, and his potency or potential capacity to serve is without limit. So I'll just say one more thing because of time. It's Balaram's appearance day. See if there's some discussion. In the section that we read about material creation, there's no... The Kaviraj, Krishna Das Kaviraj, is explaining the function of material nature. Material nature is inanimate, dormant, dead energy. It appears to have life because of touch of spirit. And when there's the touch of spirit, then it has these two functions. It generates the elements, the material causal feature, and the instruments that shape those elements, like the instruments of the potter, his wheel and his little instruments that he uses for making pots. And then there's the potter. So the potter is Vishnu, and the potter Vishnu is an expansion of Mahasankarshan, who is an expansion of Balaram, who is Krishna's direct expansion. It's all resting on Krishna. So the mechanistic scientists say, show me God. Or, where's the proof? There's one famous, celebrated atheistic professor quoted, saw a little video about his life. Where's the evidence? You know, there isn't empiric evidence. There's higher intelligence that one can understand on the authority of the Vedas, but without the authority of the Vedas, where's the evidence? Where's this potter, this unseen potter, who has his instruments and his potters, you know, so here's what I see. I'm a Mr. Scientist. I see matter produces stuff. So we don't need God in the picture. We just understand the push and pull, the technology, the cause and effect of the laws of nature and matter. And that's it. That's mechanistic science. And spiritual science says otherwise. Those laws aren't to be denied. There's a devotee... In our community, we have a devotee who is a professor in physics at Washington University, right? And he, my understanding is, he was doing his PhD, and when it came time for his marriage, he got married to a Hare Krishna devotee. Then he had to, like, put the two things together. Everything that he knows from physics and Vedic perspective. So one thing that we as the Prabhupada would do, he would, you know, get really strong with material scientists. And part of that, a major part of that, had to do with the blind faith that people have in science. If science says it's got to be true, you know, if they, whether they understand what the scientists are saying or not, and the reasons for their saying what they're saying or not, it's got to be true because the scientists say. We could take some examples, but I won't do that. But it's not, but just as we read, it's not that science can't understand anything. They can't understand anything fully, but there are some scientific facts. Like that one devotee I know was, his PhD field was in microbiology. So as a grad student, he had to teach evolution. And he had to show that there is microevolution. And so the way that he described this to me was, in the beginning, to show there is evolution, in the beginning of the course that he was teaching, there was bacteria culture over here. And then over here was some antibacteria thing. So they grew the bacteria, they grew the antibacteria, they injected the antibacteria. Some of the bacteria was killed, and some of the bacteria morphed right there in their petri dish to be able to overcome, to adjust their existence to overcome the antibacteria. Thus, within the course of one semester, there is evolution from the bacteria to bacteria that could survive the antibacteria. So he wanted to know, you know, should I be teaching this? And I said, of course. It's a fact. But microevolution doesn't mean chemical evolution. Now, you don't have to teach that, but it's, microevolution is a fact. It's an observable fact. And there are many other things that are observable facts. That's what technology, science and technology and research does. There, over here, you wiggle this, and when you wiggle this, it wiggles something over there. There's laws of nature. They discover laws of nature. You like whatever it is, drones or, you know, cell phones or whatever it is. Subtle wiggle this and something over there wiggles over there. And you get a lot of military investment of money to make weapons, and then you sell it in the marketplace and get your money back. Right? I mean, so, if this wiggles, then that wiggles, then science has got to be right. Because they say you don't need God, you just wiggle stuff over here, just have to figure out the push and pull, the cause and effect of laws of material nature. And that's all there is. That's what they say. And we have this faith in these people that can do all these amazing things. So we just have faith. And we don't need God. And then there's some persons that are more thoughtful that say, wait a minute, because push and pull of the material energy doesn't mean there isn't a conscious entity behind the material nature and the laws governing material nature and why it works the way that it works. The maintainer of that material energy and the laws, the law enforcer. So, for this nice professor and other people that I know that I have similar consternation because they have some savvy with advanced science, one of our devotees in Chicago, He's a nanotechnology professor. He's way up there in this field, Gajendra Moksha. Microtechnology is even smaller as nanotechnology. And boy, they're into that, you know, with weapons and get money and make things to kill people with nanotechnology. And then make products in the marketplace to get your money back. So he doesn't struggle with it because there's facts, observable facts. Of course, our sensors are imperfect. And how you interpret those facts depends upon the scientist. Yes? That's known in science. This set of facts, same set of facts observed by different scientists, they see it different ways, based upon their conceptions. So the senses are imperfect, the mind is makes mistakes, and is fallible. You're not going to get a perfect reading on anything. That doesn't mean fundamentally science is wrong. It's just it's, you know, very unwholesome, and it leads one to an atheistic conclusion. That's the, you know, the spirit of the unwholesomeness is that factor. So Balaram's appearance day is to help us, if we read this chapter 5 thoroughly, we can understand what's behind everything, at least from the authority of the Vedas. Because what Krishna Das Kaviraj is saying is not creative writing. It's based upon scripture. The purports are long and detailed, and it's how things are from the Vedic perspective. And behind everything is spiritual and material. Balaram, he and his expansions are pervading and supporting everything. Say it negatively. There isn't anything that he's not pervading and supporting. He's everywhere. By his expansions and his potencies. And we want to connect with him on his appearance day and honor him. And so he makes his appearance on this special day, Purnima. So we'll have some more discussion about Balaram tonight, and it won't be so philosophical tonight because there's going to be lots of new people and they couldn't sit through this. Any discussion? You have some? No. Yes?
I have a question, like, regarding all the rasas.
Regarding what?
All the rasas.
All the rasas, okay.
So is the seva rasa, can we consider as the primary or like the topmost or?
Which one?
Seva rasa. Seva. Sevya rasa.
Dasya rasa.
Seva rasa. Like.
Seva rasa, meaning dasya rasa?
Yeah, serving.
Well.
The mood of service is...
Service is there in all the rasas. Service and service and service and service and service. Service is the constitutional position of living entity. So amongst the five rasas, you will not find seva rasa as one of the five.
Okay.
That's why I was confused with your question. Shanta, dasya rasa. Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya. Dasya Rasa is the in Vrindavan, Krishna's cowherd boyfriends. In Dwarka, Krishna's chariot driver. Dasya. Hanuman. Dasya Rasa. And then there's his brother. And his brother or brothers, they are doing service, but there's an intimacy beyond even Hanuman, and that's the intimacy of friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. But seva is there in all of them, except for the first one. The first one is shanta, neutrality. Okay?
Yeah. So even...
We're good?
Yeah. Balaram... Like Balaram...
He manifests all five.
Okay, thank you, Mara.
Very fascinating. He's like super exceptional. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.